Greek religious myths focus on the gods and heroes in their solemn aspects or in connection with ritual practices. They recount the origins of the universe and the deities emerging from chaos, the line of succession among divine rulers, and the fierce struggles that eventually placed Zeus at the head of the Olympian gods, who were believed to dwell on Mount Olympus. These myths also dwell on Zeus's numerous unions with both goddesses and mortal women, relationships that gave rise to many younger gods and legendary figures. Athena's exceptional role is highlighted through the tale of her birth without a mother, springing fully armed from the head of Zeus. Stories of Apollo emphasize his sacred duties, his victories over monsters and giants, and his jealous nature, which warned of the dangers of bonds between immortals and mortals. The myths of Dionysus reveal the resistance stirred by a new form of worship. Some tales are directly tied to ritual observances, such as the curate drowning out the cries of the infant Zeus by clashing their weapons, or Hera renewing her virginity each year by bathing in the spring of Canathus. Even myths of mortal heroes and heroines often carried religious undertones. The narrative of humanity's creation, its decline, and eventual destruction in a great flood, followed by rebirth from stones, blends myth with elements of folktale. Legends, on the other hand, were seen as half-historical accounts rather than divine truths. Great epics like the Trojan War were generally believed to reflect real events and real figures. Earlier stories, such as the Voyage of the Argonauts, were understood in the same way. While most legends were shaped by folktale elements and invention, some carry historical traces. Archaeological findings support traditions of repeated destructions of Troy, and the labors of Heracles may echo memories of Mycenaean aristocratic society. The tale of the Minotaur, a creature half man and half bull, could have grown out of exaggerated reports of bull-leaping practices in Minoan Crete. Another category of legend involves grave transgressions. Those who tried to assault goddesses, deceive the gods with crimes, or usurp their powers were condemned to eternal punishment in the underworld. Legends also illustrated the punishment for social crimes like murder or incest, as in the story of Oedipus, who unknowingly killed his father and married his mother. At times, such narratives served political purposes, providing divine sanction for existing institutions or justifying territorial claims. Folktales, with their recurring themes and entertaining nature, naturally became intertwined with Greek mythology. Among the most common motifs was the disappearance and recovery of a loved one, whether a husband, wife, or child, a theme reflected in stories like Odysseus's return, the abduction of Helen, or the fate of Paris of Troy. Journeys to the underworld also appear frequently, as in the descent of Orpheus to bring back Eurydice, the ventures of Heracles, the wanderings of Odysseus, and the daring quest of Theseus. Equally captivating were stories of the clever individual overcoming overwhelming odds through cunning, the extraordinary feats of superhuman figures such as Heracles, or victories delayed but ultimately secured. Other well-loved patterns included the defeat of cruel fathers or stepmothers, the dramatic rescue of princesses from monsters, or the crucial moment when forgetfulness changes the course of events. Recognition through tokens, whether in peculiar garments or the scar of Odysseus, was another repeated device, and the tale of children abandoned and later rediscovered was also familiar. Though in Greece, the exposure of infants was not only a story element, but also a social reality. In Greek, thought myths were not merely diversions, but attempts to render the universe comprehensible in human terms. Stories of origin and creation were more systematic than in many other ancient traditions, yet their poetic artistry complicates interpretation, since folktale elements were freely woven into them. Hesiod's Theogony, for instance, while intended to recount the triumph of Zeus and the rise of the Olympian order, incorporates themes such as the rivalry of generations, the riddle of Pandora as the first woman, the trickery of Prometheus, and the cosmic battles against the Titans and later the Giants, turning the account into a work both didactic and dramatic. Hesiod described how in the beginning four primordial beings emerged: Chaos, the Void, Gaia, the Earth, Tartarus, the Abyss, and Eros, the power of love. Creation advanced when Gaia was separated from Uranus, the sky, to allow her offspring to be born. The separation achieved through the violent act of Cronus cutting off his father's genitals. Though similar to Babylonian myths, the story was reshaped in Greek style, later softened by presenting Uranus and Gaia as secretly cooperating to preserve their grandson Zeus from his devouring father. The Greeks also pictured the earth as a flat disk resting upon the river Ocean, while Helios, the sun, crossed the heavens in a chariot by day, and at night-night sailed around the world in a golden vessel. Natural chasms were thought to lead directly down into Hades, the realm of the dead. Greek myths also explored the fate of humankind across successive ages. In Works and Days, Hesiod spoke of four great eras: the golden, silver, bronze, and iron races, each a separate creation of the gods. The Golden Age, ruled by Cronus, was a time of bliss without labor or old age, when people lived in joy and feasting, and after death, became guardian spirits. Its end was unexplained, but the Silver Age followed, whose people endured long childhoods, grew arrogant, and disregarded the gods. So Zeus destroyed them and sent them beneath the earth as spirits. The next age was Bronze, populated by men of violence who eventually destroyed one another. Hesiod then interrupted the sequence to insert the Heroic Age, remembering the Minoan-Mycenaean world as a noble era when heroes often linked to the gods were rewarded with an afterlife in the Isles of the Blessed under Cronus. Finally came the Iron Age, marked by toil, injustice, and moral decline, the age in which Hesiod lamented his own life. Yet even worse days were expected, when children would be born old and wickedness would reach its extreme. Pandora's act of opening the jar explained the presence of evil in the world, while other traditions spoke of cycles in which decline would eventually give way to renewal and a return to the Golden Age, whether gradually, as Plato suggested, or suddenly, as Virgil envisioned. Hesiod himself longed for another time, earlier or later than his own. And while there were myths of progress tied to Prometheus, the god of craftsmen, they did not imagine endless improvement, for the concept of continual advancement had no place in Greek thought. Greek myths concerning the gods often told of their origins, their triumphs over monsters or rivals, their love affairs, their distinctive powers, or their association with particular sanctuaries and rituals. Because each god was linked with many different roles, their stories tended to be layered and complex. The Homeric hymns, for instance, explain how Demeter became connected with Eleusis, how Apollo was tied to Delos and Delphi, and how Athena was celebrated as the warrior protectress of Athens, who favored both heroes and the city itself. Tales of Hermes portrayed him as a mischievous figure with ties to thievery, while Aphrodite's stories centered on passion and desire, and Dionysus was linked with wine, ecstatic frenzy, miracles, and even symbolic death. Poseidon was unusual in that older traditions showed him united with the earth and horses, recalling an identity as a god of quakes and steeds before his later role as ruler of the sea. Some myths might appear humorous or frivolous, yet this judgment reflects modern assumptions rather than ancient belief. For example, although Homer barely touches on the story of Paris's judgment, he makes clear the disastrous consequences for Troy of Aphrodite's favor and the bitter hatred of Hera and Athena, showing that even seemingly light tales had serious implications. Over time, minor stories were added to the more established ones. The romances of Apollo, which earlier poets hardly mentioned, were later used to explain the sacredness of the laurel tree or the origin of his son, Asclepius, revered as a god of healing. Likewise, Hera's association with the cuckoo or the invention of the panpipe were explained through small fables, especially as such explanatory tales multiplied in the Hellenistic period. Folkloric figures also had a place within Greek imagination. The nymphs represented nature itself, inhabiting water, groves, and trees, and were feared for punishing faithless lovers. Naiads, the water nymphs, were said to drown those they loved, as in the story of Hylas, a companion of Heracles. Even the muses, normally gentle patrons of the arts, could blind human rivals such as the bard Thamyris. Satyrs, with their youthful energy and animal traits, and Selene, older and drunken counterparts, often accompanied them. The Selene, like sea deities, were imagined as keepers of hidden knowledge who revealed secrets only under coercion. Folktale figures such as Charon, the grim ferryman of the dead, also became enduring parts of Greek myth. The stories of heroes combined inherited tradition, elements of folklore, and the inventions of poets. The adventures of the Argonauts drew on a mixture of imaginative tales, while episodes from the Trojan cycle, such as the fleet's departure from Aulis or Theseus's exploits in Crete, likely preserved memories of the Minoan and Mycenaean world. By contrast, many episodes in Homer's epics owed more to his poetic genius than to genuine tradition, and even famous warriors such as Achilles, Hector, or Diomedes were shaped more by storytelling than by history. The Odyssey is especially rich in folktale motifs, while the celebrated myths of Heracles, Perseus, Cadmus, Pelops, and Oedipus all depended heavily on folktale patterns rather than historical record. Yet some figures stood at the boundary of history, religion, and legend. Heracles may have originated as a local hero from Tiryns, but the story of his death on Mount Ota and his transformation into a full deity was closely tied to ritual worship, and later his popularity caused his story to be connected with the Argonauts, the earlier Trojan expedition, and Theban traditions. The Dioscuri, Castor, and Pollux were remembered as typical heroic adventurers engaged in raids and abductions. Yet their alternating existence above and below the earth after death suggested a link with seasonal fertility, similar to Persephone's cycle. Other myths were understood as reflections of natural renewal. The most famous tells of Hades abducting Persephone, whose absence caused her mother Demeter to let the earth grow barren, until a compromise allowed her to spend part of the year in the underworld and the rest in the light. Some explained this as a symbol of the parched Greek summer, though the ancient hymn that first records the tale states clearly that Persephone's return coincided with the bloom of spring. Stories of deities who vanished into death and reappeared with the changing seasons were widespread, and in Crete, even Zeus was imagined as a god of dying and rebirth. Transformations into animals also filled many Greek tales, though this does not imply that animals were worshipped. Rather, gods took on animal shapes for particular purposes. Zeus appeared as a bull to carry off Europa, and as a swan to seduce Leda, while Poseidon became a stallion to father the wondrous horses Arion and Pegasus. These episodes do not show literal belief that the gods were animals, but instead drew upon the symbolic power of beasts like the bull, which in earlier times may have been venerated. When poets described Hera as ox-eyed, or Athena as gray-eyed, such phrases were understood metaphorically, not as remnants of animal worship. Some myths reflect the belief that the gods could walk among mortals disguised as ordinary men or women, rewarding kindness and hospitality when they encountered it. A well-known example tells of Baucis and her husband Philemon, an elderly Phrygian couple who welcomed two strangers into their home, not knowing they were Zeus and Hermes, and were spared from a devastating flood because of their generosity. Many other stories emphasize the dangers of human arrogance in trying to outdo the gods, whether through music, beauty, or even boasting of children. The satyr Marsyas, proud of his skill with the flute, was brutally punished by Apollo and Athena, while King Midas was given donkey's ears for choosing Pan's rustic music over Apollo's. The tale of Niobe shows similar divine jealousy, for her pride in her many children led to their destruction by the children of Leto. Such warnings parallel the fate of Icarus, who soared too high with wings of wax, or Phaethon, the son of the sun, who lost control of his father's chariot and brought ruin on himself. Transformations into plants or trees were another familiar theme, whether as escape from a god's pursuit, as with Daphne, who became a laurel, as the tragic consequence of an accident, as with Apollo's beloved Hyacinthus, or as punishment for pride, as with Narcissus, who fell in love with his own reflection and was turned into a flower. Equally popular were myths of distant lands and marvels, like the enchanted garden of the Hesperides in the far west, the blissful country of the Hyperboreans in the far north, or encounters with unusual peoples, such as the Amazons and strange beings like the centaurs. The power of these stories was not confined to oral tradition, but left a deep mark on art and literature. Already in the late Mycenaean and sub-Mycenaean periods, images appeared that scholars have connected with mythical figures such as centaurs, sirens, or Europa. In the geometric period of the 8th century BCE, mythological themes were depicted more often, and by the 7th century, they became common in both pottery and sculpture. The classical period brought even greater prominence. The east pediment of the Parthenon in Athens showed the dramatic birth of Athena, while the Temple of Zeus at Olympia displayed the tale of Pelops and the great labors of Heracles. Other favorite themes included the struggles between gods and giants, or the battles of the Lapiths with the centaurs. Later, the walls of Pompeii carried vivid paintings of Theseus and Ariadne, Perseus, the fall of Icarus, and the tragic end of Pyramus. Centuries afterward, Greek mythology inspired the greatest artists of the Renaissance. Botticelli immortalized the birth of Venus, Leonardo da Vinci and Michelangelo painted versions of Leda, and Raphael gave life to Galatea. Through Latin writers, especially Ovid, Greek myths also shaped European literature. Italian poets like Dante and Petrarch, English writers such as Chaucer, the Elizabethans, and John Milton, and dramatists and poets across France and Germany, from Racine to Goethe, all found inspiration in these ancient tales. Nearly every major English poet, from Shakespeare to Robert Bridges, turned to Greek mythology, and in the modern age, playwrights such as Anouilh, Cocteau, Giraudoux, Eugene O'Neill, and T.S. Eliot reinterpreted these stories on the stage, while novelists like James Joyce and André Gide reshaped them in prose. Music, too, absorbed their power. Gluck in the 18th century, Offenbach in the 19th, and later Strauss and Stravinsky in the 20th, drew on Greek myths for their compositions. Among the gods, Aphrodite held a unique place as the goddess of love and beauty, later identified with the Roman Venus. Her name was linked to the word for foam, and Hesiod told how she emerged from the sea after the genitals of Uranus were cast into the waters by his son, Cronus. She was worshipped widely as a goddess of the sea and of seafaring, and in some regions such as Sparta, Thebes, and Cyprus, she was honored as a goddess of war, though she was best known as a deity of passion, fertility, and, at times, marriage. Prostitutes sought her as their patroness, but her public cult was dignified and solemn. Many scholars argue that her worship entered Greece from the east, carrying Semitic influences, though by Homer's time, she had been thoroughly woven into Greek tradition. Homer called her the Cyprian, reflecting her strong association with Cyprus, but he also described her as the daughter of Zeus and Dion, his consort at Dodona. In the Odyssey, she appears mismatched with Hephaestus, the lame god of the forge, and is portrayed as the unfaithful wife who takes Ares, the god of war, as her lover, becoming the mother of Harmonia, Phobos and Deimos, and the ever-powerful Eros. Among Aphrodite's mortal lovers, two stood out above the rest. One was the Trojan shepherd Anchises, with whom she bore Aeneas, the hero who would later play a central role in Roman tradition. The other was Adonis, a strikingly handsome youth whose origins lay in Near Eastern fertility cults, especially the worship of Ishtar Astarte. Adonis met a tragic end when he was killed by a wild boar during a hunt, and his death was mourned annually by women at the festival of Adonia. This cult contained themes linked to the underworld, and Aphrodite herself was associated with the realm of the dead at Delphi. Her worship was especially strong at Paphos and Amethus in Cyprus, as well as on Cythera, an island that had been a Minoan colony and may have been one of the earliest centers of her cult. In mainland Greece, Corinth became her primary stronghold. She was closely linked with Eros, the Graces, and the Horai, which reinforced her role as a force of fertility and creation. The Roman poet Lucretius praised her as genetrix, the universal life giver. Her titles included Urania, meaning the heavenly one, and Pandemos, meaning she who belongs to all people. Plato, in his Symposium, used these names to distinguish between lofty intellectual love and common passion, though in reality, Urania was an honorific title drawn from Asian deities, and Pandemos referred more to her civic and political presence. Her symbols included the dove, the swan, the pomegranate, and the myrtle. Greek imagination also produced creatures like the centaurs, half man and half horse, said to be the offspring of Ixion, king of the Lapiths, and known for their wild and unruly behavior. Their most famous story was their battle with the Lapiths at the wedding of Pirithous, where they attempted to abduct the bride and were driven off in defeat. In later art and literature, they appeared as companions of Dionysus, drawing his chariot or serving as symbols of drunkenness and lust, sometimes subdued or ridden by Eros to represent their lack of self-control. Though most were portrayed as violent and inhospitable, Chiron stood apart as a wise and noble teacher. Centaurs likely emerged from folktales blending the image of mountain dwellers and forest spirits into a hybrid creature, and in early Greek art they were depicted as men with a horse's body attached behind, later evolving into the familiar form of men joined at the waist with a horse's lower half. They fought with rough branches or clubs, emphasizing their untamed nature. Aphrodite herself was portrayed in many artistic forms. In early art, she resembled Eastern fertility goddesses, often shown nude, or appeared in the same general style as other seated or standing goddesses. It was only in the 5th century BCE that she began to be represented with individuality by great Greek sculptors. The most celebrated statue of her was created by Praxiteles for the people of Cnidus, a work that became the model for later masterpieces such as the Venus de Milo. Apollo, by contrast, was a god of extraordinary range and influence, second only to Zeus in stature. From the time of Homer, he was understood as a distant and awe-inspiring deity, the archer who could strike from afar, who made mortals conscious of guilt but also purified them, who upheld sacred law and civic order, and who communicated the will of Zeus through prophets and oracles. He inspired both fear and reverence, so much so that even the gods were cautious in his presence, with only his parents, Zeus and Leto, able to face him comfortably. His bow symbolized terror, destruction, and distance, but his lyre expressed the joy of harmony, music, poetry, and dance. He was also protector of agriculture and herds, guarding against wild beasts and disease, as suggested by his title Alexikakos, the one who wards off evil. His name Phoebus carried the meaning of brightness and purity, and he gradually came to be associated with the sun. One of his epithets, Nomios, the herdsman, reflected a tradition that he once served King Admetus of Pherae in the humble roles of groom and shepherd as penance for slaying the cyclopes who had forged Zeus's thunderbolts. Another title, Lycius, linked him with wolves, perhaps because of his protection of flocks, and scholars have suggested that his earliest role may have been that of a pastoral god. Though regarded as the most truly Greek of deities, Apollo's origins can be traced to Anatolia, spreading westward to Greece and even into Egypt through Syria and Palestine. Tradition held that he and his twin sister Artemis were born on Delos, and that he later traveled to Delphi, where he slew the dragon Python and established his oracle. Taking the form of a dolphin, he commandeered a Cretan ship and brought its crew to serve him, giving Delphi its name from the word Delphis, dolphin, and replacing the earlier worship of the earth goddess Gaia with his own cult. By the Archaic Age, the Oracle of Delphi had become the most important in the Greek world, with the Pythia, an elderly local woman, delivering his words under divine inspiration, later shaped into verse by priests. Other oracles of Apollo existed, but none matched Delphi's influence. Among the festivals in his honor, the most remarkable was the Delphic Stepterion, held every 8 years, in which a boy reenacted Apollo's slaying of the Python and was sent into temporary exile at Tempe. Despite his greatness, Apollo's love affairs often ended tragically. Daphne fled from him and was changed into a laurel, which became his sacred tree. Coronis betrayed him and was slain by Artemis, though she had borne his son, Asclepius, later revered as a god of healing. Cassandra, daughter of Priam, spurned his advances and was condemned to prophesy the truth, but never be believed. In Italy, Apollo was honored early, especially for healing and prophecy. And under Augustus, his cult was elevated further after the Battle of Actium, near one of his temples. In art, Apollo was represented as an eternally youthful and beardless figure, sometimes clothed, sometimes nude, and often shown with either his bow or his lyre. Ares was the embodiment of war, representing the spirit of conflict and the savagery of battle rather than the noble or disciplined aspects of warfare. Unlike his Roman counterpart Mars, he never gained wide admiration among the Greeks, and his cult was relatively limited. From the time of Homer, He was described as the son of Zeus and Hera, one of the Olympian deities. Yet even among the gods, he was disliked, including by his own parents. On the battlefield, he was joined by his sister Eris, the spirit of strife, and by his sons with Aphrodite, Phobos, and Deimos, the personifications of fear and rout. Other figures connected with him included Enyalaios, virtually indistinguishable from Ares himself, and Enyo, a female war spirit. His worship was more common in the northern regions of Greece, and lacked the moral or social dimensions that often accompanied the cults of other major gods, though local practices gave it distinctive features. In early Sparta, for example, prisoners of war were occasionally sacrificed to him, and dogs were offered to him in nocturnal rites under the name Enyalios, hinting at an underworld connection. In Geronthrae, his festival barred women from the sacred grove, while in Tegea, he was honored with a sacrifice performed exclusively by women. At Athens, he had a shrine at the base of the Areopagus, or Hill of Ares. Mythological accounts of Ares are not numerous, though his association with Aphrodite was constant. In some traditions, she was even regarded as his wife, and together they were said to have produced Deimos, Phobos, Harmonia, and, according to later poets, Eros himself. By the daughter of Cecrops, Aglauros, he fathered Alcippe, and he was linked as progenitor of several of Heracles's foes, such as Cycnus, Lycaon, and Diomedes of Thrace. In art, he was usually depicted simply as a heavily armed warrior. His figure may be recognized in the Parthenon frieze, though not in a martial pose, and he also appears prominently on the altar frieze at Pergamum. Artemis, in contrast, was celebrated as the goddess of wild creatures, the hunt, vegetation, chastity, and childbirth, and was later equated with the Roman Diana. Daughter of Zeus and Leto, and twin sister of Apollo, she was beloved especially by rural communities. Although her character varied greatly depending on the region, she was at heart the goddess of untamed nature, often portrayed as dancing in mountains and forests with her band of nymphs. She embodied the hunter's ideal, both killing game and protecting it, especially the young, a dual role reflected in her Homeric title, Mistress of Animals. Her worship likely began either in Crete or on the Greek mainland before Hellenic times, but the Greeks later identified her with various local nature deities. This accounts for the striking differences between the chaste maiden goddess and the many-breasted figure of Artemis at Ephesus. In the Peloponnese, her cult emphasized tree worship, with dances of maidens personifying dryads, and she was linked with water, fertility, and lush vegetation, bearing epithets that tied her to lakes and marshes. In some areas, her rituals were frenzied, while elsewhere she was seen as the serene huntress accompanied by deer or dogs. One peculiar rite at Halle in Attica, the Tauropolia, honored her as bull goddess, requiring the symbolic shedding of human blood. Later poets highlighted her virginity, her delight in hunting, music, and dancing in sacred groves, as well as her presence in the cities of just men. Her wrath was legendary, symbolizing the dangers of nature itself, though Greek art avoided showing her anger directly. She only became a favorite subject for sculptors during the softer artistic style of the 4th century BCE. Asclepius, the healer, was the son of Apollo and the mortal Coronis, and was instructed in medicine by the wise centaur Chiron. His skill grew so great that Zeus, fearing he might grant immortality to humankind, struck him down with a thunderbolt. Apollo avenged his son by killing the Cyclopes who had forged the weapon, for which he was punished by being made to serve as a herdsman for Admetus. In Homer's Iliad, Asclepius appears only as a renowned physician and father of two doctors who served the Greek army at Troy, Machaon, and Podalirius. In later tradition, he was elevated first to heroic status and eventually to full divinity. His cult began in Thessaly and spread widely, with Epidaurus in the Peloponnese becoming the chief center. There, the practice of sleeping in his temple in the hope of receiving a healing dream became common. In 293 BCE, his cult was introduced to Rome, where he was worshipped as Aesculapius. Artistic depictions showed him as a standing figure draped in a cloak with one shoulder bare, always carrying a staff with a serpent coiled around it, a symbol that endures as the true emblem of medicine. The caduceus, often mistakenly used in its place today, actually belongs to Hermes, the messenger god and patron of merchants, and has no medical significance. Athena, also known as Athene, was the protector of cities and the goddess of war, handicraft, and practical wisdom, later equated by the Romans with Minerva. Unlike Artemis, who embodied the wilderness, Athena was identified with order, reason, and urban life. She was likely a pre-Greek divinity adopted into Hellenic culture. And while she retained domestic and crafts-related roles from earlier traditions, the military orientation of Greek society gradually transformed her into a powerful goddess of battle. She was uniquely born without a mother, emerging fully armed from the head of Zeus, though another story claims that Zeus swallowed the goddess Metis while she was pregnant, and Athena later sprang from him. As the favored child of Zeus, she enjoyed great influence and authority. Her presence on the citadels of various Greek cities reflected her early connection with kingship and palaces. From early times, she was regarded as a virgin goddess, and this association became central to her identity, giving rise to her titles, Pallas and Parthenos. Unlike Aphrodite, she was never overcome by passion, and as guardian of the palace, she could not be violated. In Homer's Iliad, she appears as the divine ally of Greek warriors, inspiring their strength and guiding them in battle. Zeus himself granted the realm of war both to Athena and to Ares, but her superiority to Ares lay in the fact that she embodied intelligence, discipline, and justice, whereas he represented only uncontrolled fury. She became the ideal form of the heroic warrior spirit, the very personification of victory and glory, her aegis displaying the forces of fear, strife, defense, and attack. In the Odyssey, she was the guiding deity of Odysseus, and in later tales, she aided Perseus and Heracles. Over time, she came to represent not only martial valor, but also wise counsel, moderation, and practical insight, serving as guardian of kings and cities. After the decline of the Mycenaean palaces, the citadel itself became her domain, and she was worshipped throughout Greece, though her strongest association was with Athens, the city that bore her name. She was honored there as Athena Polias, the city's guardian, during the great festival of the Panathenaea, celebrated each July as her birthday. The contest between her and Poseidon for control of Athens and her miraculous birth were carved into the pediments of the Parthenon. She was linked with symbols such as the owl, emblem of wisdom, and the snake, both of which became associated with Athens itself. In addition to her martial role, Athena presided over crafts and peaceful skills, particularly spinning and weaving, and over time she came to personify wisdom and justice. Artists usually portrayed her with helmet, armor, shield, and spear. She inspired masterpieces by the sculptor Phidias, including the monumental gold and ivory statue of Athena Parthenos in the Parthenon, and she played a central role in Aeschylus's drama Eumenides, where she established the Areopagus Council and set the precedent that a tied vote in court meant acquittal. Atlas, the son of the Titan Iapetus and the Oceanid Clymen, and brother of Prometheus, was remembered in varying traditions. In Homer's Odyssey, he appears as a marine figure holding apart the pillars that separated sky and earth, thought to stand at the farthest western horizon. Later, the name was transferred to the mountains of North Africa. In myth, he became king of this region until Perseus punished him for his lack of hospitality by showing him the head of Medusa, turning him into stone, which explained the origin of the Atlas Mountains. Hesiod described him as one of the Titans who fought against Zeus, condemned afterward to bear the weight of the heavens as punishment. In art, he was represented from the 6th century BCE as carrying the heavens, and later, in Hellenistic and Roman times, as supporting the celestial globe. The Muses were a group of sister goddesses whose origins were ancient and mysterious, their chief cult center located on Mount Helicon in Boeotia. They were said to have been born in Pieria, at the foot of Mount Olympus. Their worship is poorly documented, but they were honored every 4 years at Thespiae, near Helicon, with a festival and contest called the Museia, which was originally devoted to music and song. In the beginning, they were probably patrons of poets, who in early times composed and performed with their own musical accompaniment, though their sphere gradually expanded to include all of the arts and sciences. This broader role gave rise to their connection with the museum at Alexandria, conceived as the seat of the Muses. Already by the time of Homer, there were 9, and he occasionally invoked them collectively or individually in his epics. It was Hesiod in the 8th century BCE, however, who first provided a systematic list and named them as Clio, Euterpe, Thalia, Melpomene, Terpsichore, Erato, Polymnia, Urania, and Calliope, daughter of Zeus and Mnemosyne, or Memory. Hesiod's version became the standard, though in other places, such as Delphi or Sicyon, traditions mentioned only 3 muses, with different names. Each of Hesiod's names carried meaning. Clio as the proclaimer, Euterpe, the delightful, Thalia, the blooming, Melpomene, the songstress, Erato, the lovely, Polymnia, the one of many hymns, Urania, the heavenly, and Calliope, the beautiful-voiced. One was even called Terpsichore, the one who delights in dance, reflecting the close link between music and movement. Although they were often portrayed as unmarried, in some traditions they were given as mothers of famous sons like Orpheus, Rhesus, or Eumolpus, but these stories were later additions attached to the originally vague group. As their myths evolved inconsistently, different authors assigned different children to different muses. Sculptors frequently represented them with varying attributes such as lyres, scrolls, masks, or globes, which encouraged their later association with distinct branches of art and science, especially in Roman times. The best-known arrangement presents Calliope as the muse of epic poetry, Clio of history, Erato of love poetry, Euterpe of music, Melpomene of tragedy, Polymnia of sacred song, Terpsichore of dance, Thalia of comedy, and Urania of astronomy. Calliope, spelled Calliope in some sources, was named by Hesiod as the foremost of the 9 muses, and later revered as the patron of epic poetry. At Zeus's request, she adjudicated the dispute between Aphrodite and Persephone over Adonis. Most accounts make her the mother of the lyre player Orpheus by the Thracian king Oeagrus, while other traditions pair her with Apollo, and credit them with 2 sons, Hymen and Ilimus. Still others call her the mother of Rhesus, the Thracian king slain in the Trojan War, or of Linus, remembered as the inventor of melody and rhythm. Her figure appears on the Francois vase crafted by the potter Ergotamos around 570 BCE. Cleo, another of the nine, became the muse of history. One story says she rebuked Aphrodite for her passion for Adonis and was punished by being made to fall in love with Pierus, king of Macedonia. From this union, some tell that Hyacinthus was born, the beautiful youth later killed by Apollo, from whose blood the hyacinth flower sprang. Artists often show Cleo with a herald's trumpet and a water clock. Cronus, also written Kronos or Kronos, was venerated by pre-Hellenic peoples and only loosely by later Greeks, though the Romans identified him with Saturn. His functions were agrarian, and his Attic festival, the Cronia, celebrated the harvest in a manner reminiscent of the Saturnalia. In art, he appears as an elderly figure holding a curved blade, originally a sickle, later interpreted as a harpe. Myth makes him the youngest Titan, son of Uranus and Gaia. Urged by his mother, he severed his father and so divided sky from earth. Ruling the Titans, he took his sister Rhea as consort. She bore Hestia, Demeter, Hera, Hades, and Poseidon, whom he swallowed after a prophecy warned he would be overthrown by his child. When Zeus was born, Rhea hid the infant in Crete and gave Cronus a stone to swallow instead. Grown to strength, Zeus forced Cronus to release his siblings, waged war on him, and prevailed. Some traditions confine Cronus in Tartarus, others enthrone him in Elysium. Many remember his reign as a golden age for humankind. The Cyclopes were one-eyed giants with varied backstories. In Homer, they are cannibal herdsmen in a far western land, traditionally Sicily, among whom Odysseus survives by blinding Polyphemus. Hesiod instead makes them three sons of Uranus and Gaia, Argus, Brontes, and Steropes, who forged Zeus's thunderbolts. Later writers turn them into the smiths of Hephaestus and tell that Apollo killed them in vengeance for the bolt that slew Asclepius. Ancient, massive city walls, such as those at Tiryns, were ascribed to these giants, and archaeologists still call such unsquared masonry Cyclopean. Demeter, daughter of Cronus and Rhea, sister and consort of Zeus, was above all the goddess of agriculture, her very name marking her as a mother. Though Homer rarely mentions her and does not list her among the Olympians, her mythic roots are old. Her story centers on Persephone's abduction by Hades. In her search for her daughter, she revealed secret rites to the hospitable people of Eleusis. Grief diverted her care from the fields and brought famine. She also loved Iasion, a Cretan, and bore Plutus, the wealth of the earth in the sense of abundant produce. Demeter most commonly appears as a grain goddess. The epithet Iulo links her with the sheaf. Her power extended beyond cereals to vegetation and the fruits of the earth, beans excepted, which belonged to the hero Chiamites. And in this wider scope, she approached Gaia and the great mother, Cybele, with whom she shared several titles. She also bore an underworld aspect. At Sparta and at the Chthonia festival in Hermione, where four elderly women sacrificed a cow, she was honored in chthonic guise. Arcadian cults called her Erinys, the Avenger, and Melena, the Black One, emphasizing her darker side. Elsewhere, she presided over health, birth, and marriage, and even held political titles, notably Amphictyonus as patron of the Amphictyonic League, known from Delphi. Many agrarian feasts honored her. The Haloa in December, linked with the threshing floor of Triptolemus, her first priest and bringer of agriculture. The Cloia in early spring for Demeter Chloe, the goddess of green growth, distinct from a later ram sacrifice on the 6th of Thargelion. The Proerosia, prayers before plowing and before the rising of Arcturus, likely in September at Eleusis. The Thalesia, an autumn thanksgiving on Kos, the women's Thesmophoria to increase the seed's fruitfulness, and the midsummer Scirophoria as its companion. Her attributes mirror her sphere, ears of grain, a mystic basket brimming with flowers, fruits, and corn, the pig as favored animal, and, in her underworld aspect, a serpent at her side. In Greek art, she resembles Hera, but with a gentler, fuller presence, sometimes driving a chariot drawn by horses or dragons, sometimes walking or seated, often with her daughter. The Romans identified her with Ceres. Dionysus, called Bacchus, or in Rome, Liber, was the god of fertility and vegetation, famed as the god of wine and ecstatic release. His name on a Linear B tablet shows Mycenaean period worship, though the legends emphasize a foreign origin. He was the son of Zeus and Semele, daughter of Cadmus. Hera's jealousy led Semele to demand that Zeus reveal himself. The divine epiphany destroyed her, but Zeus rescued the fetus, sewed it into his thigh, and brought the child to term, giving rise to the tale that the god was twice born. Hermes carried the infant to be raised by Bacchantes at Nysa, a place imagined rather than mapped. As the embodiment of the life saps of nature, he was honored with lavish orgiastic rites, the Dionysia, or Bacchanalia, which quickly drew women to his worship and provoked male resistance. In Thrace, Lycurgus opposed him and went mad and blind. In Thebes, Pentheus tried to spy on the god's rites and was torn apart by the frenzied women. Athenians who slighted his cult were punished with impotence. Women took to the hills in fawn skins and ivy crowns, cried "Yoi" in holy bands, and waved thyrsoi, fennel staffs tipped with ivy, while they danced by torchlight to the double pipe and the hand drum. Filled with the god's power, they were believed to charm snakes, nurse wild creatures, and display unnatural strength, even rending living victims before a raw feast. They hailed him as Thunderer, Bullhorned, or Bullfaced, convinced he took on the form of the sacrificial beast. In Orphic tradition, Dionysus, also known as Zagreus, was born from the union of Zeus and his daughter Persephone. At Hera's urging, the Titans attacked the infant god, tearing him apart, cooking his body, and consuming the pieces. Yet his heart was preserved by Athena, and through Semele Zeus restored him to life as Dionysus. To punish the crime, Zeus struck the Titans with thunderbolts and reduced them to ashes. From their remains, humanity was formed, inheriting both the dark essence of the Titans and the divine spark of the gods. Echo, a mountain nymph of Greek legend, is best remembered through Ovid's account. She angered Hera by distracting her with constant talk, preventing the goddess from discovering Zeus's affairs. In retaliation, Hera stripped Echo of her voice, leaving her only the power to repeat the words of others. She later wasted away in unrequited love for Narcissus, who was enchanted by his own reflection, until nothing of her remained but her voice. Another tradition tells how she spurned the god Pan, who then drove shepherds into a frenzy that led them to tear her apart. Her remains were hidden by earth, though her song was allowed to endure. Dionysus himself embodied inspiration and ecstatic release, making his cult central to Greek art and literature. Theatrical performances in Athens, both tragic and comic, were staged during festivals in his honor, notably the Linnaea and the city Dionysia. Lyric poets composed hymns known as dithyrambs to praise him. Roman writers often misunderstood his character, reducing him to Bacchus, a figure of wine and merriment, and by 186 BCE, the Bacchanalia was banned in Italy. His followers included fertility spirits, such as satyrs and Seleni, and his rites prominently displayed the phallus. The god could assume animal shapes and was closely linked to creatures such as bulls, goats, and serpents. His common symbols were the ivy crown, the thyrsus, and the cantharos, a large drinking cup. Early depictions show him as a bearded man, but later art preferred a youthful, delicate figure. Scenes of Bacchic revelry became a favorite subject for vase painters. Eos, the goddess who personified the dawn, was the daughter of the Titans Hyperion, and Theia, and the sister of Helios, the sun, and Selene, the moon. With Astraeus, she became the mother of the winds, Zephyrus, Notus, and Boreas, as well as the evening star, Hesperus, and other stars. With Tithonus, a Trojan prince, she bore Memnon, the Ethiopian king killed by Achilles during the Trojan War. Homer gave her the title Rosy-Fingered. She was also linked romantically with Orion and Cephalus, the latter being the father of another Phaethon. Her most famous love, however, was Tithonus, for whom she begged Zeus to grant immortality, but she forgot to request eternal youth. Tithonus lived on, growing ever more frail but never dying. In art, she appears as a graceful winged woman, sometimes rising in a chariot drawn by winged horses or carrying pitchers that release the morning dew. The Romans knew her as Aurora. Eros, the god of love, had different origins in myth. Hesiod called him one of the first beings, born from chaos itself, while later traditions made him the son of Aphrodite, joined with Zeus, Ares, or Hermes. He governed not only passion, but fertility, and his companion was often his brother Anteros, the embodiment of mutual love. He was also attended by deities of longing and desire, Pothos and Himeros. Over time, poets described not just one Eros, but many, called the Erotes. In early art, he appeared as a beautiful winged youth, but later imagery portrayed him as a mischievous child, especially in Hellenistic works. His chief sanctuary was in Thespiae, where the Eretidia festival was held, and he shared a shrine with Aphrodite on the Acropolis at Athens. Euterpe, another of the muses, was linked to music, particularly the flute, though some accounts also associated her with tragedy. In certain versions, she was said to be the mother of Rhesus, the Thracian king slain at Troy, whose father was thought to be the river god Strymon. The Furies, or Erinyes, were goddesses of vengeance who pursued those guilty of terrible crimes. Their origins were variously explained. Hesiod described them as born from the blood of Uranus when he was struck down, while Aeschylus made them daughters of night, and Sophocles traced them to both darkness and earth. Euripides was the first to describe them as three, later named Alecto, Tisiphone, and Megara. They dwelled in the underworld but rose to earth to pursue the wicked. Because their name was feared, the Greeks often used gentler titles, calling them the Kindly Ones or the Venerable Goddesses. Gaia, the Earth herself, was both mother and consort of Uranus. She bore the Titans, the Giants, the Cyclopes, and the Furies. One of her youngest children, Cronus, separated her from Uranus by overthrowing him. In early belief, she may have been a prime mother goddess, worshipped before Zeus became preeminent. Though less prominent in later worship, she was seen as the source of dreams, the nurturer of plants, and the protector of children. Some traditions portray her aiding at the birth of Zeus, while others depict her as his enemy, producing monsters like Typhon to challenge him. Hades, the stern ruler of the underworld, was the son of Cronus and Rhea, and brother to Zeus, Poseidon, Demeter, Hera, and Hestia. After the fall of the Titans, the cosmos was divided by lot, and the realm of the dead fell to him. He reigned there with Persephone as his queen, and was guarded by the hound Cerberus. Though he oversaw the realm of punishment, he rarely acted as judge himself, leaving torment to the Furies. Remote and unyielding, Hades was a figure of dread, often addressed under gentler titles such as Clymenus or Eubuleus. He was also called Pluto, the giver of wealth, since all riches beneath the earth were his, and all living things ultimately came to his realm. The word Hades became the Greek term for the shadowy world of the dead, while Tartarus, once a deeper abyss of punishment, came to be treated as part of the same domain. In the earliest periods of Greek religion, divine worship often took place in striking natural settings such as groves, caves, or mountain peaks. During the Mycenaean age, the gods were honored within the king's palace. Essential to their cult was the sacred precinct, or temenos, which contained the altar, sometimes a temple, and notable features of nature like the olive tree sacred to Pandrosos on the Athenian Acropolis. By Homeric times, temples, known as naoi, literally dwellings for the gods, were already familiar. These early sanctuaries, as suggested by models found at Perichora, were simple wooden structures. Toward the end of the 7th century BCE, stone, first poros and later marble, replaced wood, and temples grew larger, often surrounded by rows of columns. Inside, a wooden idol was placed in the main chamber, or kella, open at the east. The image itself was not directly worshipped, though it could be carried in procession. Shrines to heroes were generally modest, with simple offering pits, while miniature shrines were also known. Oracular centers were especially significant, and many included underground chambers. Though none has been discovered at Delphi, tradition insisted that the Pythia descended before delivering her visions. At the shrine of Trophonius at Levadia, excavated in 1967, worshippers practiced incubation, a ritual sleep meant to provoke dreams. The most famous site for such healing rites was the sanctuary of Asclepius at Epidaurus, where the sick rested in a special hall, awaiting guidance from the god in their dreams. Divination was widespread across Greece. The flight of birds was interpreted by augurs, while dreams, sneezes, and even the shapes of altar smoke were read as signs. Seers also studied the entrails of sacrificial animals for omens. Hebe, whose name means the bloom of youth, was the daughter of Zeus and Hera. In Homeric poetry, she appears as the divine cupbearer of the gods, symbolizing eternal youth. Worshippers often honored her alongside her mother, as if she were an aspect of Hera herself. She later became the bride of Heracles once he ascended to Olympus. Her cult was especially strong at Phlius and Sicyon, where she was known by other names such as Ganymeda and Dia. Among the Romans, she was equated with Juventus. Hephaestus, the god of fire, was deeply connected with the islands of Asia Minor, particularly Lemnos, where he held an important cult. According to myth, he was born lame and was twice cast from Olympus, first by Hera in shame, and later by Zeus after a quarrel, only to be brought back by Dionysus. He was the divine smith, master of the forge, and patron of craftsmen, and volcanic or fiery landscapes were considered his workshops. His cult reached Athens by around 600 BCE and later spread to Campania. In art, he was usually depicted as a bearded craftsman wearing a short tunic and close-fitting cap, though younger portrayals also exist. The Romans identified him with Vulcan. Hera, sister and wife of Zeus, reigned as queen of the Olympian gods and was revered across Greece. The Romans equated her with Juno. In myth and literature, she appears frequently as the jealous and vengeful consort of Zeus, relentlessly pursuing his mortal lovers and their children. She eventually replaced Dione as Zeus's recognized wife and shared his prominence. Hera was honored both as the Queen of Heaven and as the goddess of marriage and women's lives, particularly childbirth, in which she took the form of Eileithyia at Argos and Athens. In Argos and Samos, she was worshipped as a civic patroness, combining agricultural rites with military honors, such as the shield festival and armed processions. Her sacred animals included the cow, while her associated birds shifted from the cuckoo to the peacock. Artistic depictions show her as a majestic matron, severe yet youthful. Heracles, the most renowned of Greek heroes, was the son of Zeus and Alcmene, a descendant of Perseus. By Hera's trick, another child, Eurystheus, was born before him and took the throne, forcing Heracles to serve him. Hera's enmity followed him from birth, beginning with two serpents sent to kill him in his cradle, which he strangled with his infant hands. As a man, he first conquered the kingdom of Orchomenus and married Megara, daughter of King Creon, but in a fit of madness sent by Hera, he killed her and their children. As punishment, he was bound to Eurystheus, who imposed upon him the famous 12 labors, slaying the Nemean lion, destroying the Hydra of Lerna, capturing the Cerinean hind, subduing the Erymanthian boar, cleaning the Augean stables in a single day, shooting the Stymphalian birds, seizing the Cretan bull, taming the man-eating mares of Diomedes, winning the girdle of Hippolyte, taking the cattle of the giant Geryon, fetching the golden apples of the Hesperides, and finally dragging Cerberus, the hound of Hades, to the surface. Even after these feats, Heracles continued to wage campaigns and adventures. He fought the river god Achelous for the hand of Deianira, but tragedy struck when the dying centaur Nessus tricked her into preserving his poisoned blood. Years later, she gave Heracles a cloak smeared with it, believing it would secure his love. But instead, it killed him. On Mount Oeta, his mortal body was consumed on a pyre, while his immortal essence ascended to Olympus. There he was reconciled with Hera and wed to Hebe, goddess of youth. In art and literature, Heracles is shown as immensely strong, but not overly tall, a man of great appetites and passions, at times kind, but also prone to bursts of violence. His weapons were the bow and the club, and he often wore the skin of the Nemean lion. In Italy, he was worshipped not only by merchants and travelers seeking luck, but also by those in need of rescue and protection. Hermes, son of Zeus and the nymph Maia, was a Greek deity often equated with the Roman Mercury, and sometimes linked with the mysterious Cabiri. His name likely comes from Herma, a heap of stones used in the countryside to mark boundaries or serve as landmarks. Arcadia, particularly Mount Cyllene, was regarded as his birthplace and the earliest center of his cult. There, he was especially honored as a god of fertility, and his images were ithyphallic in form. Throughout both myth and worship, Hermes was closely tied to the care of flocks and herds, and often associated with vegetation deities like Pan and the nymphs. In Homer's Odyssey, however, his role is more defined as the swift messenger of the gods and guide of souls to the realm of Hades. He also had a reputation as a dream bringer, receiving the final libation before sleep. As a divine herald, he became guardian of roads, thresholds, and travelers, while fortune discovered by chance was attributed to his hand. This made him not only a symbol of good luck, but also a god of profit. Whether honestly earned or deceitfully won, reflecting his origins as a fertility deity. In many ways, he was paired with Apollo. Both were patrons of music, though Hermes was credited with inventing the lyre, and he presided over eloquence and even forms of popular divination. His sacred number was 4, and the 4th day of each month was celebrated as his birthday. Early art depicted him as a mature, bearded man in a tunic, often with winged boots and cap, sometimes carrying a sheep across his shoulders as protector of herds, or bearing his herald's staff, the Caricaion. From the late 5th century BCE, artists increasingly portrayed him as a youthful, athletic figure, nude and beardless. Hestia, daughter of Cronus and Rhea, was the goddess of the hearth. When Apollo and Poseidon sought her hand, she vowed perpetual virginity, and in return, Zeus granted her the honor of presiding over all sacrifices. She was revered above all as guardian of the family hearth, but because the household was mirrored in the life of the city, she was also honored publicly at the civic hearth located in the Prytaneion, or town hall. Closely linked to Zeus in matters of hospitality and family unity, she was also associated with Hermes, the two representing the balance between domestic life and the wider world of travel and commerce. Philosophers later elevated her role, envisioning her as the hearth goddess of the entire cosmos. Hygieia embodied health and well-being. Her earliest cult traces appear at Titane, near Corinth, where she was worshipped alongside Asclepius. Initially independent, she gradually came to be regarded as his daughter, though some accounts made her his consort. Their joint cult spread widely and reached Rome from Epidaurus in 293 BCE, where Hygieia merged with the Roman goddess Sallust. In later tradition, both were seen as protective deities. Her sacred animal was the serpent, often depicted drinking from a bowl in her hand. Hypnos, the personification of sleep, was the son of Nyx, night, and twin brother of Thanatos, death. Myths placed his dwelling variously in the underworld, on the island of Lemnos, or, in Ovid's account, in a dark cave in the land of the Cimmerians, through which the river of forgetfulness, Lethe, flowed. Surrounded by countless suns who brought dreams, Hypnos was said to rule over visions of the night. Among these children were Morpheus, who shaped dreams of men, Aixilus, who sent dreams of animals, and Phantasus, who formed illusions of lifeless objects. In Homer's Iliad, Hera persuaded Hypnos to lull Zeus to sleep so she could assist the Greeks at Troy. And as a reward, he received Pasithea, one of the Graces, as his bride. Later in the same epic, Hypnos and Thanatos together bore away the body of the slain Sarpedon to Lycia, a scene that became a favorite for Greek vase painters. Melpomene, one of the 9 muses, was associated with tragedy and the music of the lyre. In art, she was distinguished by the tragic mask and sometimes carried the club of Heracles. Some traditions even claimed she was the mother of the sirens, born from her union with the river god Achelous. Mnemosyne, the Titan goddess of memory and daughter of Uranus and Gaia, was said by Hesiod to have become the mother of the 9 muses after Zeus visited her in Pieria for 9 nights in succession. Morpheus, one of the many sons of Hypnos, shaped the dreams of sleepers in human form, while his brothers, known in some accounts as Phobator or Aeschylus and as Phantasus, sent visions of animals and of lifeless things. Nemesis existed in 2 overlapping conceptions, first as an Attic goddess, daughter of night and closely resembling Artemis in character and worship, venerated especially at Rhamnus, and second, as the personified judgment that meets human arrogance. A post-Homeric tale reports that, to evade Zeus, Nemesis took the form of a goose until he, turning into a swan, caught her. From the egg she laid, and later gave to Leda, Helen was hatched. The abstract nemesis, whose first altar was ascribed to Adrastus in Boeotia, drew particular devotion in Rome, where soldiers honored her as the patroness of the training ground under the title Nemesis Campestris. Nike, born of the giant Pallas and the river Styx, came to embody victory itself. At Athens, she often appeared as a small figure in the hands of Athena or of Zeus. Athena's own aspect as Athena Nike was rendered without wings, whereas Nike alone was winged. Artists showed her with palm or wreath, sometimes with a herald's staff, erecting trophies or hovering over winners in war and sport, a mediator of success between mortals and gods. As Victoria in Rome, she guarded the Senate, her statue set up in the Curia Julia by Augustus in memory of Actium, later stood at the heart of the late 4th century clash between pagan custom and Christian reform. Celebrated portrayals include Paionios's sculpture of about 424 BCE and the Nike of Samothrace, probably dedicated by the Rhodians around 203 BCE and discovered to have been poised upon the prow of a flagship set into the sanctuary floor so it seemed to float. Nyx, the personification of night, was so formidable that even Zeus respected her, as the Iliad relates. Hesiod made her the child of chaos and the mother of primal forces such as sleep, death, the fates, nemesis, and old age. Orphic poetry advanced her still further, calling her the daughter and successor of the creator Phanes and the prophetic guide of later rulers, Uranus, Cronus, and Zeus, while philosophers could claim that all things arose from night, an idea echoed in Aristophanes' Birds. Though rarely worshipped, she fascinated poets and artists throughout antiquity. Oceanus, the eldest Titan in Hesiod's account, was husband to Tethys and father to uncounted river gods and ocean nymphs. The Iliad briefly names him the begetter of the gods and of all things, remarks that later influenced theology and cosmology. Dramatists such as Aeschylus gave him a role, and artists placed his image on famous works from the Francois vase to the Pergamon altar, while his name settled into nearly the modern sense of Ocean Pan, the rustic fertility god of Arcadia, whose name was popularly connected with all, was more truly the pasturer, a horned, goat-legged figure whom the Romans likened to Faunus. He haunted high pastures, piped at noon, and could send flocks and travelers into sudden stampede, panic by his shout. A playful slander made him the offspring of Penelope and her suitors, and a story retold by Plutarch says a voice over the sea once cried, "The great Pan is dead," a cry Christians later tied to the death of Christ. Orpheus, famed for music that moved beasts, trees, and stones, sailed with the Argonauts and outsang the sirens. After his bride Eurydice died of a snake bite, he charmed Charon and Cerberus and won her release from Hades on the condition that he not look back before reaching daylight. He looked, and she vanished. Traditions then divide. Some say Maenads, driven by Dionysus, tore him apart for preferring Apollo. His singing head floated to Lesbos to found an oracle until Apollo ended its prophecies, while the muses gathered his limbs and set his lyre among the stars. Later ages reimagined him, from medieval Sir Orfeo to operas by Monteverdi, Gluck, and Offenbach, to Cocteau's modern retellings and film. Out of his legend grew an Orphic movement with wandering initiators, rituals that mimed the tearing and rebirth of Dionysus, and teachings focused on moral recompense after death and the soul's true life. Pandora, fashioned by Hephaestus at Zeus's command to counter the gift of fire stolen by Prometheus, received the god's finest endowments and was sent to Epimetheus, who ignored his brother's warning and married her. She opened a jar from which afflictions poured over humankind, while hope remained shut within. Later, Tellings reversed the contents and blamed the loss of blessings on her curiosity. The vessel, rendered in Renaissance Latin as a box rather than a jar, gave rise to the enduring phrase. Persephone, daughter of Zeus and Demeter, and the future queen of the dead, was seized by Hades as she gathered flowers, and Demeter's sorrow blighted the fields until Zeus intervened. Because she had tasted a pomegranate seed in the underworld, she could not return wholly, and so she spent part of each year below, and the rest with her mother. One version counted a third of the year in Hades, and two-thirds in the world above. Another reckoned 4 months beneath, a poetic answer to the parched Greek summers that precede the renewing autumn rains. Phoebe, a Titan daughter of Uranus and Gaia, became the mother of Leto and Asteria by Coeus, and thus the grandmother of Apollo and Artemis. Bearing the epithet gold-crowned and a name signifying brightness, the root also heard in Apollo's title Phoebus. She was credited in Aeschylus's Eumenides with granting Apollo the right of his Delphic oracle, and later tradition aligned her, like Artemis and the Roman Diana, with the moon. Polyhymnia, one of the nine muses, was revered for inspiring dance and, in some traditions, the measured art of geometry. Some legends make her the mother of Triptolemus, first priest of Demeter, and credited with bringing agriculture to humankind, by Hymarus, a son of Ares, or by Celeus, the king of Eleusis. Other versions call her the mother of Orpheus, master of the lyre, or of Eros, the power of love. Poseidon ruled the sea and all waters, commanded earthquakes, and presided over horses. Unlike Pontus, who personified the sea's vastness, Poseidon was a sovereign god whose name was understood as husband of the earth, or lord of the earth. He was the son of Cronus and Rhea, and brother to Zeus and Hades. When the brothers overthrew their father, the realm of the sea fell to him by lot. His emblem and weapon was the trident, a three-pronged spear said by Hesiod to have been forged by the Cyclops, much as they fashioned Zeus's thunderbolt and Hades' helm. As Earthshaker, he was worshipped far from the coast at sites centered on pools and springs, honored with titles that called him Stabilizer of the Ground. As master of horses, likely brought into Greece with the earliest horsekeeping Hellens, he sired many, the most famous being the winged Pegasus by the Gorgon Medusa. He contended with other powers for lands, most famously losing Attica to Athena, yet still receiving worship there, especially at Colonus under the title of Horses. And he fathered both royal lineages and monstrous beings, counting Peleus and Neleus among noble descendants, and Orion, Antaeus, and Polyphemus among fearsome offspring. He married the Oceanid Amphitrite and begot Triton and other sea spirits. The Isthmian Games at Corinth were held in his honor with athletic contests and horse races. In art, he appears with trident, dolphin, or tuna, and the Romans, focusing on his maritime nature, identified him with Neptune. Prometheus, wisest of the Titans and renowned as Forethinker, became the supreme trickster and the divine ally of humankind, linking his cleverness to fire, craft, and the making of mortals. Hesiod tells how he deceived Zeus at the division of the sacrificial portions, causing the ruler of gods to hide fire from humanity. Prometheus then stole it back for mortals, and Zeus answered with a counter gift, the woman Pandora, whom Epimetheus accepted despite warnings. When Pandora lifted the lid of her jar, toil, disease, and other afflictions poured out across the earth while hope remained within. In punishment for the theft of fire and his championship of mortals, Zeus chained Prometheus to a Caucasian crag where an eagle tore at his immortal liver, which renewed itself endlessly. Aeschylus later portrayed him as the bringer of arts, sciences, and every means of survival, a culture hero suffering for human advancement. Rhea, an ancient mother figure akin to Earth's goddess and to the Great Mother, was the daughter of Uranus and Gaia and the consort of her brother, Cronus. Fearing the prophecy that one of his children would dethrone him, Cronus swallowed each newborn, Hestia, Demeter, Hera, Hades, and Poseidon. When Zeus was born, Rhea hid him in a Cretan cave and handed Cronus a swaddled stone. The child survived, later forced his father to disgorge his siblings, and overthrew him. Selene embodied the moon and received worship at the turning points of the lunar month. Hesiod made her the daughter of Hyperion and Theia, and sister to Helios the sun and Eos the dawn. The hymn devoted to her celebrates a union with Zeus that produced the radiant Pandaic, while Alcmen called her the mother of the dew spirit, Herse. She loved the mortal Tithonus, for whom immortality was granted without the blessing of youth, leaving him to age forever in enchanted sleep within a cave on Mount Latmus. Poets also paired her with Pan. By the 5th century, she was often linked with Artemis and the bright Titan name Phoebe. Artists showed her crowned with a crescent and driving a two-horse chariot, and as Luna, she had temples on Rome's Aventine and Palatine. Terpsichore, another of the muses, encouraged lyric song and the art of dancing, and is remembered whenever people speak of something as Terpsichorean. Some traditions say she bore the Sirens, those beings with woman's face and bird's body, by the sea god Achilles, or by the river power Phorcys. The Fates, known to poets as Moirai, were three ancient weavers of destiny whose functions matured from Homer's impersonal fate into distinct figures by Hesiod's time. Clotho spinning the thread of life, Lachesis measuring and allotting it, and Atropos cutting it to determine death. The Romans identified them with their Parcae, Nona, Decuma, and Morta, originally spirits of childbirth who came to rule life's span and its sorrows. Thalia, likewise one of the nine muses, presided over comedy, and in some early accounts counted among the Graces, the goddesses of fertility. She bore the orgiastic Corybantes to Apollo, whose rites honored the Great Mother. Artists placed a shepherd's staff and a comic mask in her hands, the signs of pastoral play and laughter. Thanatos personified death itself, twin to sleep and child of night. He arrived when the Fates' measure was spent, carrying souls to the realm below. Legends tell how Heracles wrestled him into submission to spare the life of Alcestis, and how Sisyphus tricked him for a brief extension of days. Themis gave shape to justice, wise counsel, and the ordering of sacred custom. In Hesiod, she was the daughter of heaven and earth, the second consort of Zeus, and the mother of the seasons, of the Fates, and, in some accounts, of the Hesperides. On Olympus, she sustained ceremony and maintained order, prophesied the will of the gods, and was remembered for yielding the Delphic oracle to Apollo. A lost epic said she conceived the Trojan War with Zeus to ease an overcrowded world. Her worship was widespread, and sculptors rendered her as a grave woman carrying scales. Nymphs, a vast company of long-lived but not immortal spirits of nature, belonged to every fertile place. Trees and forests, glens and mountain caves, springs and rivers, the sea and its shoals. Each kind took its name from its realm. Oceanids for the sea, Nereids for waters salt and fresh, Naiads for springs and streams, Oreads for mountains, Nepeae for dells, and Alcaeids for groves. In Italy, local water goddesses known as Limfae readily merged with their Greek counterparts. Taiké, the shifting power of chance, dispensed both favor and misfortune, and later became identified with the Roman Fortuna. Hesiod called her a daughter of Oceanus and Tethys, while other poets made her the child of Zeus. She was linked with the kindly household spirit called the Good Daemon, and with Nemesis, whose corrective force tempered excessive prosperity. Artists gave Tyche wings, a crown, a scepter, and the horn of plenty. Sometimes she appeared blindfolded with tokens of risk. At Argos, a temple honored her, and tradition said the clever Palamedes dedicated the first dice to her. Urania, whose name means heavenly, inspired the study of the stars. Some traditions make her the mother of Linus the musician, fathered by Hermes or by Amphimerus, a son of Poseidon, and later writers occasionally used her name as an epithet for Aphrodite in her loftier aspect. Artists placed a globe and compass with her, fitting tools for the muse who measured the courses of the heavens. Uranus was the embodiment of the sky itself. Hesiod tells how, after chaos came into being, Earth gave rise to Uranus along with the mountains and the sea. From her union with Uranus were born the Titans, the Cyclopes, and the hundred-handed giants. But Uranus despised his children and concealed them within the body of their mother. Earth, in torment, sought their aid for revenge, and only Cronus responded. Armed with a curved blade, he ambushed Uranus as he approached and cut away his genitals. Drops of blood fell upon Earth, and from them arose the Furies, the Giants, and the Nymphs of the Ash Trees. The severed parts drifted upon the waves, and from the white foam that gathered around them came Aphrodite, the goddess of love and beauty. Through this act, Cronus brought about the separation of sky and Earth. Uranus was later said to have consorted not only with Earth, but also with Hestia, night, day, and Clymen. Unlike many deities, he was not worshipped in classical Greece, which suggests that his myth reached the Greeks from earlier traditions beyond their own culture. The story's resemblance to Eastern legends, particularly the Hittite tale of Kumarbi, and the use of the curved blade, point toward Asiatic origins. Among the divinities celebrated in Greek religion were the Graces, goddesses of charm, fertility, and beauty. Their name reflected the delight and flourishing aspect of a fertile field or a blooming garden. Their number varied, but they were usually thought of as three: Aglaia, who embodied brightness, Euphrosyne, who represented joy, and Thalia, who symbolized flowering. Different traditions gave them different parentage. Some said they were the daughters of Zeus and Hera, others that they were born from Zeus and Eurynome, daughter of Oceanus, while still others traced them to Helios and Eagle. They were often associated with Aphrodite, goddess of love, with Pytho, the spirit of persuasion, and with Hermes, god of fertility and messenger of the gods. Early art depicted them clothed, but later they were commonly shown as graceful nude figures. Their principal cult centers included Orchomenus in Boeotia, Athens, Sparta, and Paphos. Sometimes the singular form Charis or Gratia was used to describe the personification of grace and beauty. The supreme god of the Greek pantheon was Zeus, identified by the Romans with Jupiter, a deity of the sky and the storms. His name is linguistically linked to the ancient Indian sky god, Dias. He was seen as the bringer of thunder, lightning, rain, and winds, and his weapon was the thunderbolt. He was regarded as father and ruler of both gods and men. A myth from Crete, later woven into Greek tradition, tells that Cronus, fearful of a prophecy that one of his children would overthrow him, swallowed each newborn child. His wife, Rhea, unwilling to lose her youngest, tricked him by wrapping a stone in swaddling clothes and handing it to him, while hiding the infant Zeus in a cave on Crete. There, the child was nourished by the nymph or goat Amalthea and protected by the Curetes, young warriors who clashed their weapons to muffle his cries. When Zeus reached manhood, he challenged the Titans, defeated Cronus, and freed his siblings, dividing the world with his brothers Hades and Poseidon. As king of the gods, Zeus secured victory over the giants, children of Earth and Tartarus, and quelled several uprisings among the Olympians themselves. To Homer and many Greeks, the natural home of a weather god was the lofty summit of Mount Olympus, and it was here that Zeus reigned with the other immortals under his authority. From this height, he was believed to see and know all things, judging human behavior, rewarding virtue, and punishing wrongdoing. He was a guardian of homes, strangers, and suppliants, and closely associated with the personification of Justice, who was thought of as his daughter. Yet Zeus was equally famed for his passions. His many affairs, often disguised through transformations into animals, caused constant strife with his wife, Hera. Disguised as a cuckoo, he seduced Hera herself. In the form of a swan, he lay with Leda. As a bull, he carried away Europa. His liaisons produced numerous children, Apollo and Artemis with Leto, Helen and the Dioscuri with Leda, Persephone with Demeter, Athena, who sprang from his head after he swallowed Metis, and several offspring with Hera, including Hephaestus, Hebe, Ares, and Eileithyia. Dionysus was born to him and Semele, while countless others filled both divine and heroic lineages. Despite his supremacy, Zeus's universal character sometimes made him less central in practice than powerful local deities like Athena at Athens or Hera at Argos. Altars to him, as guardian of the household or as protector of hospitality, were common, and mountaintop sanctuaries were visited by pilgrims. Yet Athens did not build him a temple until the late 6th century BCE, and at Olympia, his temple followed that of Hera. In art, he appeared as a strong, mature man with a full beard, his emblems the eagle and the thunderbolt, symbols of the authority and power he wielded over gods and men alike.